northeastern Afghanistan. This afternoon, over listener-sponsored commercial-free radio WBAI in New York at 99.5 FM. It's 2 p.m. Coming up at 3 o'clock will be Talk Back with Hugh Hamilton. And tomorrow, as you just heard Armand say, tomorrow at 1 o'clock, The Positive Mind with Armand DeMille. But right now it's 2 p.m., and we encourage you to stay tuned for Health Action.
Listening to Health Action over WBAI 99.5 FM in New York, and perhaps my voice is unfamiliar in this time for quite a while. I'm Kathy Davis, and I'm joined in studio by Bob Lederer, and today we are celebrating the actual birthday of Dr. Martin Luther King, and what better way to celebrate his birthday than with our joyous return to the air. And with WBAI being returned to its origins, bringing back the family, and being able to hear each other and communicate with each other both over the airwaves and in person to person, shaking hands, hugging, and really building the bridges back. And very, very pleased that we are able to come back into the studio and broadcast. And I'm also very glad that this is a happy and joyous and compassionate occasion. I'm finding that as we begin to reintegrate ourselves, it's very important that we not embody any of the negative energy of anger and retribution. It's important for us to talk to each other, understand each other, forgive where we can, and move forward in the work that we do here over the air, and many of us being activists, the work we do in our lives. So this is a time to move, to celebrate and to move forward. And while we want to be, have full disclosure of things that have gone on in the past and some of the issues and problems that led to the complicated divisions that happened here at WBAI, and I think many of us who perhaps have been gagged and not able to really speak our mind, there may be a little period of reaching back into clarity and pulling some things out and expressing ourselves and trying to, you know, really get a full understanding of what's happened. And but the real order of business is to move on and to celebrate and to do the work that we do here so well. And so I'm very happy to be back, and I want to invite my co-host Bob Lederer to also have a word.
Well, it's a joyous afternoon, Kathy. It's just fantastic to be back here in the studio with you, and it's not only a sunny day outside, but it's sunny here in the halls of WBAI, where for the first time in over a year, there's laughter and joy and mutual camaraderie instead of the atmosphere of fear and intimidation that so prevailed over this past year. And it's really a thrill, not only for me to be back on the air, but much more importantly for the 37 people who were fired, banned, suspended, or driven from the station, including people who took a stand on principle and resigned due to their principled opposition to what was going on here, that we are back, and we're going to return WBAI to the kind of community-oriented progressive programming that it made it so invaluable to the New York metro area for the last 40 years. And I have to say that today has been an extremely emotional experience for me. I've just about been crying every other minute as I hear the dulcet tones of Bernard White's voice and Amy Goodman and just the whole crew back on the air where they belong, giving us really important information and analysis on a whole range of issues. So I just feel so much gratitude to the thousands and thousands of people around the country, but most especially in the New York metro area, who made this victory possible. And for those who may not know, as a result of the firings and the bannings that went down over the past year or so, there was a snowballing movement led by listeners, but also with the participation of some very courageous producers here at WBAI. And then as time went on, many of us became former producers who stood up and spoke out for what needed to change here. And that movement, to make a very long story short, and we will be doing more programming about the history of that movement, because I think it's important that people learn the lessons of how social change occurs. It's not a gift from any top-down forces, and it's not the work of a couple of brilliant individuals or excellent public speakers. It's the result of many, many types of people pooling their energies and their creativity and making contributions in a lot of different ways. So it's everything from the people who stood vigil out in the cold and the rain, sometimes 24 hours a day in front of the station. Actually, it just summons to mind that the last time I was in this I was at this building was probably the 20th time I had participated in a picket line outside. I haven't been inside the halls of the station since I was banned by interim general manager Utrice Lead back in August. But it was the people doing the vigils. It was the people producing the WBAI in Exile, an internet radio station. Errol Maitland and Reem Katkuda and a whole crew of others. It was the people designing petitions and email campaigns, and even people who went the extra distance and carried out civil disobedience when Ms. Leed rejected the plea from the local advisory board to continue its 25-year tradition of meeting here in this building. And so two board members and seven listeners were arrested and spent 30 hours in lockup. There were just many, many forms of struggle that all culminated last Saturday night in a vote by, and of course, I can't forget the critical role of the four lawsuits against the illegally constituted Pacifica National Board that was filled with pro-corporate and pro-government individuals who were hell-bent and determined to take this network away from its historic roots in promoting information about and activism about peace and justice, but towards a more corporatized agenda. And those suits led to a settlement a month ago, which reconstituted the board with a majority of progressives. And at the first in-person meeting of that board last weekend, which by popular demand was here in New York City, the heart of the movement to take back the network, there was a vote, 10-3, to bring back all of the fired, banned, and suspended producers. So that's how we're here today. And it's just a really amazing experience that I've been through of meeting the most dedicated and selfless people that I have ever known. So I just want to pay a few tributes to some of the individuals and organizations that have been instrumental in this last year of struggle, because it has really been specific organizations that have played the critical role. As much as many individuals were important, without the kinds of infrastructure and planning and endless meetings, as much as people really hate them, they are often the key to making sure a campaign is successful. So I'd like to particularly pay tribute to the Pacifica campaign, started by the courageous Juan Gonzalez, who resigned as co-host of Democracy Now in protest of what was going on here. He resigned in order to found that campaign, which led an incredibly successful direct action campaign against the corporate board members and a financial boycott of the network that played a major role in bringing this board the former board to its knees, as well as the organization that I've devoted my energies to, Concerned Friends of WBAI, a mass movement of hundreds of listeners that mobilized perhaps 20 demonstrations, both at the station, at the corporate offices of many of the board members, as well as at the national board meetings that occurred in Houston in March and in outside of Washington, D.C. in November. Together with many, many groups around the country. I should add, this was an absolutely national campaign, and we would never have won this victory without the support and solidarity of our sisters and brothers in the signal areas of the other four Pacifica stations in Washington, D.C., Houston, Los Angeles, and Berkeley. Two other important organizations here locally were the Community for Progressive Radio, which organized particularly in the African-American community, a very critical component, some of the most dedicated activists who reached out to counter the poison and the lies put out by management here that tried to make this struggle into a racial divide rather than being what it was always about, which was trying to bring back both the programmers and the programs that had a particular emphasis on the interests and needs of communities of color and poor people in general and oppressed people around the world. And so the Community for Progressive Radio really was instrumental in educating the African-American community. And then finally, the local advisory board itself, what in other institutions might simply be a bureaucratic structure that holds routine meetings, but the folks on this board really rose to the occasion and became activists and fighters that really played an instrumental role. There are many other groups that I'm sure I'm leaving out, but those were the ones that I think were the most central, as well as the Progressive Producers Caucus, which kind of evolved among those of us, including Kathy and myself, who were very unhappy with and really quite opposed to the policies being implemented beginning with the Christmas coup. And that was a source of resistance both within the station and outside that was critical. And there were also community groups, and I can't begin to list the long number of them from every wing of the progressive community that came out to demonstrations that mobilized their members. as well as labor unions played a critical role. There's one in particular I'd just like to pay tribute to, the Community Food Resource Center, headed by Kathy Goldman, who's celebrating her 70th birthday today. Happy birthday, Kathy. Thank you for providing space for meetings many times at your offices and for being there as an activist yourself. And finally, there's a few individuals that I think deserve special mention. Number one is John Cohen. John is a member of the local advisory board. He's also a longtime anti-racist and anti-sexist activist and a colleague of mine in a collective called Resistance in Brooklyn. And John was part of the movement and is part of the movement to take back the station. I also want to send him some special healing energy today because he is in Mount Sinai Hospital, has been for the past 4 weeks, struggling with leukemia and has gone through chemotherapy, is now dealing with a serious fungal infection. And some longtime listeners may recall that Kathy and I had him on the program back in April. Before he had arrived at full-blown leukemia, he had pre-leukemia. He was here in the studio and is just a model of integrative approaches to healing using both Western medicine, pharmaceuticals, but also a full complement of nutrition, acupuncture, massage, yoga, and just many, many other creative modalities and sort of combining the best of both worlds. But most of all, having a tremendous courage to overcome the very, very uphill odds with his form of leukemia. The prospects are extremely bleak, and he's already outlived his doctor's prognosis, I think, by about 15 months. So, John, I send you a hug and a lot of healing energy, and we hope you get better very, very soon. And finally, three members of my immediate family I want to thank so much. First of all, my parents, who, although they don't live in New York and they don't listen to WBAI, and although they don't share my politics, they're actually very, very conservative, and yet they've really been an incredible source of moral support, and I appreciate that. And finally, my lover, John Riley, who has not only been just very, very personally supportive on every level, but he's also himself an amazingly committed activist for social justice and anti-racism, and has been a partner in the struggle to take back WBAI, very, very active on the media committee of Concerned Friends of WBAI, and one of the most creative political strategists I've ever met, someone who I've really relied on for to bounce ideas off of and to give and to feed me with ideas, even up to and including what to say on today's program. Mm-hmm. So thank you, John. I love you. And finally, and then I will shut up, but I have to say that Kathy Davis has been an inspiration to work with. Of course, we'd worked together for the past 6 years on Health Action, and it's always been a pleasure to be a co-host and a co-producer, but there was a whole new dimension of Kathy that I hadn't really seen until this struggle developed, and that is that in addition to being a healer, a spiritual person, a person who is filled with love and is always trying to aim towards the positive, she is also a fierce fighter for what's right. And she was there in the trenches at every step of the way, at many of the protests, at many of the meetings, and lending her voice, as well as on the air. And that is one of the reasons that she ended up getting fired along with me back in August from this program. And Kathy, maybe you might want to say something about the circumstances of your firing, because you got a very interesting memo from the station manager at the time that kind of explained.
Right. It was a little bit, it was interesting and a little bit different. We got a call, I got a call on Monday saying, well, you have a memo in your box. You better check it before you come in to do the show tomorrow. So I came in Monday night and found two letters, one for Bob and one for myself. And they were very different letters. And Bob was given a whole list of offenses because he's quite active and publicly so. He's kind of an in-your-face activist. So it was easy for them to find a long list of grievances, though unjustified. At least, you know, they were there. Some things that they could at least point to. But they had a little bit more difficulty in my case because I tend to be more subtle, work in the background in support. So there was actually nothing that could be pinned on me. I hadn't broken the gag rule. I hadn't done any personal attacks. I hadn't done anything. except maybe be present when information was shared. So in my letter, I was told, given no reason actually from being taken off of Health Action, but given a list of things that I must do in order to stay on the air Monday night. So I was given a list of charges.
Maybe you could just explain what your Monday night show is.
Right. On Monday night, I have a spiritual program called Heart of Mind, which I've been doing for about a year, maybe a little more than a year. And it's about mind, body, spirit, and consciousness, not so much about health and politics. But I was instructed that if I was to have a chance to stay on the air doing those things, that I would be very careful. And this is a quote from my letter. If the program in any way strays from its mission with the intent to inspire listeners, which is, of course, what I do, to go against the will of current management. And if you as host do the same, the program will be canceled and you will be off the air. You will receive no further warning about this. So what they're essentially saying is that the program itself would not inspire people, and as I, the host, could not inspire people, of course, to act against the will of management, which is sort of a moving theme. Nobody knew exactly what that meant. So anything that I said or did could be held against me. So it was a fine line that I tried to walk in maintaining the air, in the sense that I felt that I have a larger mission of healing and nourishing and opening into the community that I wanted to maintain. And I felt that I wanted to keep the my access to the air so that we can share information. Like in the last weeks I announced the fact that the board meeting was even going to exist, because we were under threat that we couldn't even announce these things. So I wanted to be able to have that access to be able to announce critical events. So I tried to walk that fine line. But I just think it's a real indication of the kind of fear, intimidation that we had to exist under at the station during that time. And I just want to make it clear that whatever the forces were that were working through people to make all of this happen, it wasn't as it was depicted over the air. There were a lot of complicated levels to what went on, but it was not about the race thing. It just wasn't about that. It was about power, ego, and a lot of other issues that may be a little bit uglier than we would hope that we would bring to the air. But now is our opportunity to dispel some of that, let it go, and move on to a better time. And that's really where I want to focus, because my idea is not to turn to my colleagues here at the station who, for whatever reason, didn't have the understanding or the vision or even the opinion of challenging that. I mean, that was the decision that they made. They had every right to make those decisions, just as we had every right to go out there and build a counterpoint so that we could come back into the station. So I think now is an opportunity for us all to just let go of that violence out of our heart and move forward and build something new, because we have a world that is in crisis, and that's where we need to put all of our energy.
Well, I certainly share those sentiments. I do think we need to try to heal, to try to pull together, and not at all to look for recriminations, absolutely. There is actually one other person that I do want to pay tribute to, and in a strange way, he is both partially responsible, you could say, or became the focus for the effort to mainstream this network, and now has become a critical inspiration in the movement to liberate the network, and that's Mumia Abu-Jamal. And I think it's very fitting on Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthday to remember that Mumia is not only a person who's been railroaded through to a false conviction and a death sentence that should never have happened to him, but he's also an incredible follower of the teachings of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., as well as a follower of the teachings of Malcolm X and other great leaders of the Black Liberation Movement. And it's his inspiring words, his eloquence, and his brilliant political analysis that made him a threat to the powers that be, so that when National Public Radio in 1994 cravenly surrendered to right-wing pressures in Congress, and on the eve of their airing of his commentaries that they had contracted with him to run on a monthly basis concerning the criminal justice system, when they caved in and reneged, Pacifica Radio picked them right up and started running them regularly, and then itself became the target of right-wing attacks on the floor of Congress. And this became one of many pressures, as well as particularly because of the role of federal money through the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, that started the conservatizing pressure on the higher management at Pacifica and on the national board to say, we better watch out. Too much of this radical programming, putting people, political prisoners who stand for black liberation like Mumia, is going to get us in hot water. And so when Amy Goodman then began becoming, or her program, Democracy Now!, became a venue for Mumia's case, for his voice, his commentaries, she received direct and increasingly abusive pressure from top management to stop playing Mumia's voice so often, as well as to stop playing the voices of many, many grassroots radical activists. But I think Mumia kind of was the symbol of what the fight for Pacifica Radio was all about, was are we going to allow, or is this network going to allow and indeed to promote the voices of the voiceless, or is it going to be a network that simply tries to upscale its listenership and increase the financial take by getting more listeners who will rally around things like lots of music that they like to hear, and not to say that music's not important, but to make that the central organizing principle of a radio station, as has happened sadly in our Houston and Washington stations, or instead whether it will stay true to the mission, the founding mission of Pacifica, which was founded by a radical pacifist, Lou Hill, in World War II. So I think Mumia's voice is an important one in this, and I was very inspired when at the national board meeting a brief statement from him was communicated, in which he expressed solidarity with the fight to bring back the fired and banned and to take back the network, and send his good wishes. And so we certainly send our love and support to him, and pray that he is soon released from his unjust death sentence and his unjust conviction for a crime he did not commit. And I will continue my work in the community to free Mumia Abu-Jamal. So now we'd like to talk for a little while about some of the health issues that we've covered on Health Action over the years, and to point out that during the time that you've missed this program, that you've been denied the access to this program, there's been some very interesting developments on some of the fronts that we've covered before. And I'd just like to give a quick summary of a couple of things that have gone on. Among the topics that I covered in the past year was the question of the right to accessible housing for the disabled. And this has been a long-time fight with the home builders lobby, and one of the interesting intersections that I found so compelling in choosing topics for programming last year, and of course which ultimately got me in a lot of hot water, was that repeatedly we would find overlaps between struggles in the community around many different issues such as health and the struggle to relieve or to change the board of Pacifica Radio from being one that's controlled by corporate forces. So, for instance, one of the greatest enemies of the disability rights movement in this country is a lobby group called the National Association of Home Builders. And so happens that one of their top managers was sitting for a long time on the Pacifica National Board and was one of the most virulent enemies of progressive radio, and was a major force behind the purges that have gone down at all five stations. So some of my guests who were disabled themselves from the Disability Rights Activist Movement would talk about their battles in Albany for legislation to make new home construction accessible to the disabled, and then would talk about their participation in demonstrations against the Home Builders Association and in support of the campaign to remove this manager from the Pacifica Board. So it was an interesting overlap there. Since that time, since I was fired, That movement had a great victory here in New York, and that is that the housing code has been amended under a tremendous organizing campaign by the disability rights movement, which I'm proud to say that the Free Pacifica movement had a small role in mobilizing, because we became educated about those issues and helped to mobilize people for a hearing in Albany that did lead to improving the code, so it's now stronger in requiring homes to be new homes to be made accessible. Another issue that we covered repeatedly, and for which, by the way, I was called on the carpet by Interim General Manager Eutrice Lead, was the struggle of the Puerto Rican people against the U.S. Navy's bombing of the small island of Vieques. I'm sure many listeners may know by now about this battle. It's been going on for the 60 years that the Navy's been there, and because of the use of radioactive forms of armaments, the cancer rate has skyrocketed on Vieques, even compared to the main island of Puerto Rico, as well as rising problems with heart disease and other unusual health problems. And so we covered repeatedly the struggle to remove the Navy, which seemed to be reaching a critical mass due to the incredible courage, the massive civil disobedience. Most people are familiar with the jail time done by Reverend Sharpton and three Puerto Rican community leaders in the Bronx. They served, I think, about 3 months in jail, and we had one of those leaders, Jose Rivera, on the show, both live from prison and after he got out of prison. Since that time, of course, September 11th occurred, and unfortunately, as part of the drumbeat for war and pro-military politics that President Bush has exploited this attack for, it's been very difficult for the movement in Vieques to gain support, and we'll see if Bush sticks to President Clinton's promise to close the base there by the year 2003 and find an alternative location. And, of course, the movement's not satisfied with waiting another year. They're pushing for it to be sooner and for a full cleanup of the environmental catastrophe on that island. Now, one other area that we've covered here is this struggle for proper health care for prisoners. And this has been a very serious problem around the country. New York State is not exempt from that. It has one of the largest prison systems in the United States. Of course, overwhelmingly African-American and Latino people. And political prisoners, those who are in jail for their political beliefs, suffer even greater because they've always been singled out for persecution. And we did a program earlier this year, or rather I should say last year, on the plight of Robert Seth Hayes, a former Black Panther who has been in prison, I believe, for about 30 years and has been struggling with both diabetes and hepatitis C, and was really not getting adequate care. And there was a pressure campaign on the Department of Corrections back in the summer to get him proper medical care. One of the organizations that has been leading in the fight to get proper care, not only for Robert Seth Hayes, but for a whole group of political prisoners in the New York State system, is the Malcolm X Grassroots Movement. And we now have joining us on the air Monifa Akinwole from the Malcolm X Grassroots Movement, and somebody who has been on this air before. Monifa, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me.
Okay, well, before we jump into the issues concerning prison medical care, I'm wondering if you have any particular thoughts on this Martin Luther King birthday.
Yes, you know, I think it's really key, particularly now with the war that's going on, that we really look and examine, you know, some of our best teachers and leaders that we've had in our community and what their philosophies have been. We recently did a political education discussion around just like the war in Vietnam and Martin Luther King and his stance around it. And we don't really see to the extent, you know, his caliber of representation of people really speaking out. And I think we need to do that. We need to, like, you know, study some of his analysis around that. I think now more than ever it's really key to just recognize the work that he did and the positions that he took, particularly around war.
Right, absolutely. In fact, this morning, in one of the really wonderful synchronicities of life, it was so appropriate that it was on Martin Luther King's birthday that Bernard White and all the rest of us, but particularly Bernard, would come back to the airwaves, and one of the tapes he played, as he has played so many times before, what made it so inspiring to listen to WBAI on this day every year was the tape Why I Oppose the War in Vietnam.
Excellent piece, yeah.
That really, I mean, every time I hear it again, I become jolted by the radical difference between the Martin Luther King that we are projected through the corporate media, which focuses on the level of consciousness he had at the time of the I Have a Dream speech in 1963, as opposed to the incredibly, you know, much more politically radical and pro-socialist and anti-imperialist analysis that he had developed by 1967 when he gave this speech. And that ultimately, of course, was what set him up for assassination by the FBI. And
absolutely.
I think that needs to be, that can't be emphasized often enough. I would like to go now to the work that you're involved in. You have been involved in for quite some time on the health care of political prisoners in New York State, and tell us where that stands and how Robert Seth Hayes is doing.
You know, it's been really up and down. As many people know, and some may not know, in 2000, in the span of 1 year, we lost two New York State political prisoners, Albert Noah Washington and Teddy Jaheef. And in our analysis, it was completely due to the lack of proper health care, to neglect. And we see just a pattern that when particularly political active prisoners and political prisoners take ill, it's almost as though there's a concerted effort to further their illness and not treat them. And so we're seeing that right now with Robert Seth Hayes. He has diabetes, bad case of diabetes, and one of the things that diabetics out there know is that you have to constantly be able to check your blood sugar level with finger sticks. Well, for many, many, many months, the prison wouldn't allow him to do that, wouldn't let him have access to checking his blood sugar daily, nor would they allow him to be able to have in his locker, you know, fruits and candies and things you would need just in case you needed to adjust your blood sugar level. We had to go so far as to bring up to the prison a New York State assemblyman to demand that he just be given regular treatment that any diabetic would need to survive, you know. And so I think that right there is just a glaring example of how the medical conditions are really bad and almost, you know, purposefully damaging to the person who is ill.
Well, we are going to wrap up the segment, so I just wanted to ask you what is the current campaign and how can people plug into it, and you know, what are you asking the community to do?
We would really like people to get involved. They could give me a call at my office, which is 718-622-8292. That's 718-622-8292. We have an array of addresses for people to write Clinton facility, Clinton Correctional Facility, as well as the commissioner of the Department of Corrections for New York State, Commissioner Gord, and our local elected officials, to keep them on top of this issue, because if we, it seems like as soon as we turn away, they stop doing what they're supposed to do for him. And Robert Seth Hayes is someone who's given to the community. He's served many years in prison because of it, and we really should support him.
Okay, Manifa, can you repeat that phone number again, please?
718-622-8292, and that's the Malcolm X Grassroots Movement.
Okay, I want to thank you, Manifa Akinwole, from the Malcolm X Grassroots Movement, and we will continue to follow this issue. And we're going to go to a musical break, and then when we come back, more of the revitalized health action with myself, Bob Lederer, and Kathy Davis. Stay tuned. again, we're back with Health Action on WBAI Pacifica Radio, 99.5 FM, free speech liberated radio here in New York City. I'm Bob Lederer, together in studio, once again reunited with Kathy Davis, and we're so thrilled and pleased to be back. Thanks to all of you listeners. Thanks to thousands of people in the New York metro area and around the country who worked and struggled and strived so that this radio station could be restored. Besides the fight going on here for the past 13 months, there has been a fight, and oftentimes it's been thrown into hibernation by the extremeness of the purges that have gone on at other Pacifica stations. And one of the most repressed and one of the saddest cases where there was a tremendous promise and an original spark of progressive programming at was at our sister station in Washington, D.C., WPFW. That was started in the 70s in the heart of the nation's capital by African-American programmers in order to bring the African-American voice to, and of course, music, very important role of music, to the listeners there. But what has happened over the years is that the music has been purposely built up at the expense of public affairs programming, and particularly activist-oriented programmers have been targeted for a purge. And at this point, since a coup that was very similar to the WBAI coup occurred in 1993, the public affairs programming has been reduced by more than half. It's, I think, less than 20% of the program schedule now. One of the former programmers who was removed by the National Executive Director of Pacifica, who was fired a few months ago, Bessie Wash, is a wonderful African-American health programmer named Fahima Sek. And she testified this weekend at the National Board meeting about her experience. And so we want to play a short cut of her presentation, and you'll hear her being introduced by the chair of the Interim Pacifica National Board, Leslie Kagan.
I'm going to check WBAI. when there was a shadow inauguration, a program put together by Sidrek Franklin and Gloria Menard, who are at WPFW, covering the counter Bush inauguration. This was a program emanating from PFW, broadcasting at all the networks except the one it was produced at. What kind of insanity is that? What justification can you have for that? All I'm saying is, folks, we need to put aside our differences because this is a crucial time. It's the best of times and the worst of times. We must come together. The struggle continues. Hotel.
Thank you. Day breaks in my life. Sometimes the sun shines in my life. Oh, sometimes things work right in my life. You
to the voice of Fahima Sek, a fired programmer of a health show on our sister station in Washington, WPFW, speaking at the Pacifica National Board meeting here in New York last weekend. And it was a privilege to have Fahima as a guest on our show back in February, talking about the issues of censorship of health programming and the creeping corporatization of the public radio and television. And I hope to have Fahima back on our air, and I hope in this next period of time we can move towards more cooperative ventures with other community radio stations to do to begin to work towards perhaps national health programming. And this is just a good reminder that the struggle may have been won at WBAI, but the struggle continues at the Washington station as well as at the Los Angeles station, where there's just a horrendously repressive station manager who's been entrenched for over 6 years and has personally purged over 150 staff members and programs, and some of the most vibrant voices of the Chicano and other Latino communities as well as African American have been thrown off the air, and we need to take that station, or that community needs to take that station back. So let's be in solidarity with our brothers and sisters in D.C. and in L.A. So, Kathy.
Oh, I'm just really happy to be here during this time slot to be with you, the listeners, and I look forward to being able to get back in the trenches and doing the community work that I like to do involving health, and and bring back information to you about all the opportunities to take care of yourself and all the different ways that you can take care of yourself. So I'm very grateful for being able to come back to that fold and remind you that hopefully we'll be able to connect with each other at various community events or at one of the Qigong classes that I provide throughout the city in Manhattan and in Brooklyn. And I'll play a card in a little bit so you can get the information about that. But really, we wanted to go back to Martin Luther King and just give a little bit of his I Have a Dream speech, because that really is the birth of his true genius and people becoming aware on a national level of his genius. And I think that what we have here at WBAI is also a dream. Just as Bob Lederer spoke, that we have a mission here to accomplish, some of us very publicly, some of us in a deep community way. And we have the world to deal with. So in honor and in keeping with that dream, I'd like to play a little bit of his speech, and I ask you to stay tuned again to Health Action, and it will be back. again next week, and you'll be able to hear from all three co-hosts in the future.
We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. I have a dream that one day on the red hills of Georgia, sons of former slaves and the sons of former slave owners will they be able to sit down together at the table of brotherhood? I have a dream that one day, even the state of Mississippi, a state sweltering with the heat of injustice, sweltering with the heat of oppression, will be transformed into an oasis of freedom and justice. I have a dream. My four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream today. I have a dream that one day, down in Alabama with its vicious racists, with its one day right there in Alabama, little black boys and black girls will be able to join hands with little white boys and white girls as sisters and brothers. I have a dream today. I have a dream that one day every valley shall be exalted. And every hill and mountain shall be made low. The rough places will be made plain. And the will be made straight, and the glory of the Lord shall be revealed, and all flesh shall see it together. This is our hope. This is the faith that I go back to the South with. With this faith, we will be able to hew out of the mountain of despair a stone of hope. With this faith, we will be able to transform the jangling discords of our nation into a beautiful symphony of brotherhood. With this faith, we will be able to work together, to pray together, to struggle together, to go to jail together, to stand up for freedom together, knowing that we will be free one day. This will be the day when all of God's children will be able to sing with new meaning, "My country, 'tis of thee. Sweet land of liberty, of thee I sing. Land where my fathers died, land of the pilgrim's pride. From every mountainside, let freedom ring. And if America is to be a great nation, this must become true. And so let freedom ring. From the prodigious hilltops of New Hampshire, let freedom ring. From the mighty mountains of New York, let freedom ring. From the heightening Alleghenies of Pennsylvania, let freedom ring. From the snow-capped Rockies of Colorado, let freedom ring. From the curvaceous slopes of California. But not only that, let freedom ring from Stone Mountain of Georgia. Let freedom ring from Lookout Mountain of Tennessee. Let freedom ring from every hill and molehill of Mississippi. From every mountainside, let freedom ring when we allow it. When we allow freedom ring, when we let it ring from every village and every hamlet, from every state and every city, we will be able to speed up that day when all of God's children, black men and white men, Jews and Gentiles, Protestants and Catholics, will be able to join hands and sing in the words of the old Negro spiritual, "Free at last, free at last,
go out, I just want to invite people to the next general meeting of Concerned Friends of WBAI to learn the latest developments in the taking back of WBAI for the people. That's Thursday, January 24th. And for more information and the location, which is not set yet, call 800-825-0055. Again, 800-825-0055. And if you want to contact Kathy and me and Health Action, call us on our voicemail here at